Welcome to the show. You're listening to Indie Film Scene with your hosts, Renell Golden and Desiree Velez.
I'm Renell Golden.
And I'm Desi Velez. Well, good morning, Renell.
Hi. You know what? We want to welcome everyone to this edition of Indie Film Scene.
I'm extremely ecstatic to be here, Renell, because I know that all of us across the country have been a little on hold here with the corona stuff happening. And I think it's a great opportunity for us to start this and give people a chance to learn about the tremendous success others are having in the indie film and how to do it the correct way.
Yes. And people that are actually indie filmmakers are, you know, we don't realize how much work they're actually doing and what great projects they have. And today we have a really cool special guest with us, Ron Newcomb. So, Desi, if you could tell us a little bit about him and then we'll bring him on.
Well, I will tell you, I have been following Ron for quite a while. And I will tell you, you couldn't have a better first guest because Ron is 100% quality all the way. And he is the full package. He covers the whole gamut from producing to marketing to pitching to distribution. I mean, he does it all. And he's been remarkably successful. And he has a lot on IMDb. But the first thing that caught me was a show that he was producing called The Rangers, which reminded me a lot of The Lord of the Rings. And I was just in awe at everything, the quality of the actors, the costuming, the makeup, where they were shooting, the direction. It was just great. So, Ron, are you there?
Yes, let's go ahead and bring Ron on. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all having me. Thank you very much.
We're happy to have you. Especially
great.
So Ron,
yeah, no,
I am...
Ron, I'm ready
I
to talk indie
excited.
Filmmaking. Let's do it. Me too.
Let's do it. I'm excited for you to be here because I was really pitching you. I said, you are the complete package.
That was very sweet of you.
What
Thank
I want to start with, Ron, is the first time I met you, I had gone over to a screening of The Rangers. And
yeah.
I just wanted you, you know, take over and tell us a little bit about that and the new projects that you have lined up.
Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate it. Yeah, I've kind of run the gamut in the independent filmmaking environment, and you know, from concept to thought to all the way out through distribution. Right before The Rangers, I had another film called The Fellows Hip: Rise of the Gamers. And what I did was I couldn't really afford an A-list talent, and so I attached myself to The Lord of the Rings through a video game. I got permission to use the Lord of the Rings video game right at the height of when the last film was going to release. And so a lot of distributors couldn't believe that I actually had permission to use the video game in my film. And that garnered me distribution. And that was kind of my film school, you know, 101 there. I had done a few other things before that, but that really was my venture into the real business of filmmaking. I ended up going to AFM, and I've been to NAPTE, which is kind of AFM but for TV. I've been there a couple times. So
Ron, let me stop you real quick because we may have novices on here. So can you explain what the AFM is?
Sure. This is from or to the filmmakers that really want to do this vocationally for a living. They want to do this as a business. You have to have distribution in mind, marketing in mind. You have to know the sales channels. And so AFM stands for the American Film Market. It's where buyers and sellers come from all over the world, and they buy content for their territory, and then they bring it back to their country or their territory, and they'll redistribute it in whatever means that they've, you know, paid for, and they'll make their money back. So it's not really like the free market at times for in the States. Sometimes there's even government officials from other countries that are mandated by their government to come over and get content. And so they'll get shows, they'll get films. And just like, you know, they'll go get 20, 30 of them and then go back to their country. They might do a theatrical release with them. They might put it directly on TV. but you get that that sales, and you generally need a sales agent. There's a lot of sales agents that call themselves distributors. They're actually sales agents, but we need them for international sales. International sales is 60% of the market, and it's only getting bigger. And so international sales is a very good thing. It's one of the reasons why people wonder why certain film festivals get really big. It's usually because they have a film market attached to them. And the film market is what you want to, that's where the real business side of it is happening. So Berlin, Cannes, they have film markets attached.
If a newbie and you were headed to American Film Market, as I understand it, and we've been there a few times too, it's best to go with a completed project to that particular market. So what would you recommend that a filmmaker, you know, be prepared to take to market beyond just their finished film? That's something I find them always confused about. Like, what do they need? The one sheets, the pitch packets, what do you recommend?
Yeah, you know, the American film market, you know, and we're in the digital age, of course, and it's not like sales only happen at the markets. They happen all year round. So getting a sales agent, it really is your goal. But when you do an event like AFM, those people are hyper-focused during that time frame, and it's like Wednesday to Sunday, I want to say, and they're hyper-focused on selling content. That's for the first 3 days. The other 3 days are generally reserved for meetings for filmmakers that have content to sell. So you can get two tickets. I ended up getting the ticket for the whole event for the whole week. You don't need to spend all the money to get to go for the whole week unless you know, you really want to. Get the last 3 days. That's really when the meetings are. You can take the opportunity because you're in Santa Monica. It happens in the same place every year. You could take advantage of projects that you have in development, and you can try to get some monies. You can get – a lot of people probably have heard about what's called foreign pre-sales. That's become a very difficult market, but this is – the thought of that is you get a A-list talent attached to your film, and you literally pre-sell the film before it's ever made. You're going to sell it at a discounted rate, but you can imagine the help that brings to your budget. So let's say if I'm trying to raise $10 million, but I pre-sell it to different markets – for $5 million, when now I only need to bring in $5 million instead of that full 10. There's ways to kind of manipulate your budget to get to the full amount that you need. What do you need to bring now? Many times you can have a screener right online. You can password protect it. There's companies that even do screenings. But, you know, I use Vimeo and just password protect it. And you can send that link along, and then people can watch your film. You need to have that sizzle. They're not probably going to watch your whole 90-minute feature. They're going to scrub through it. And that term scrub is, you know, they're going to just kind of look at a little bit of it incrementally throughout the whole film. And they're looking for quality. They're looking for, you know, sound, color, all the thing, acting. The story, right. They're going to kind of see the collateral that you bring to the table, like a one sheet or a poster, and they're going to see if they can sell it. Many times when these buyers come in, they don't watch your whole film. They'll watch the first 10 minutes of it to see the quality, and they're going to buy it based upon the collateral you bring. And what is that? Well, that's the movie poster. That's the one sheet. So who's in it matters, right? That's sellability. If it's a genre piece, you know, do you have epic dragons in it? What's this? That's one of the reasons why I do a lot of fantasy and sci-fi, is that spectacle sells. It doesn't diminish that actors are still essential, but spectacle sells internationally. There's some genres that simply just don't translate well to the foreign market. For instance, you know, not every comedy is going to translate well in every country. So fantasy, though, and sci-fi translates very nicely. Every culture has a dragon in it. And so that's why I've kind of leaned into that niche of fantasy and sci-fi.
Let me tell you, when it comes, you said something really important, which I'm just going to stop here a sec, is quality. And the biggest mistake that I see with up-and-coming indie filmmakers is they have what I call the fever. I got to make a movie. And we all have that. But they will jump the gun And a lot of times they haven't done their homework in trying to raise the money, or they don't know how to raise the money, or they give up trying to raise the full amount, and they come shooting out the gate doing a really low quality production all the way around, and with people that can't act out of a wet paper bag. And then they're under the assumption that it's the best thing they've ever made in the world, and they're going to go and they will be dead in the water because, like you said, they're not going to view the whole thing. And
if
you what you bring to the table, they'll give it like a quick look, and they can spot in a nanosecond if this is basement quality indie stuff or something good.
In what you find,
and what I like about Ron is Ron takes it from – Ron does everything from the artwork, the concept, everything. And so I would love for you to take us through the steps. Like you said, you got access to this game.
Yeah.
So I would love for you to give us the steps that you took through this to get this project up and out.
Well,
about
your fantasy network and get that out there.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. Fantasy and sci-fi. Fantasy and sci-fi is a sellable niche that translates very well internationally. And what I did was, in the D.C. market, which is where I'm from, we do think tanks a lot. And so I put together this think tank of other fantasy sci-fi filmmakers from all over the world. And about 15 of us would meet every quarter. And as a result of that, we realized there was no fantasy outlet. There's the sci-fi channel, but there's no fantasy channel. And we felt there should be. And so we created the Fantasy Network. So if you go to thefantasy.network, that's our streaming platform. Most of it is free because want the content out there. We have over 500 hours of content that you can go and watch on there. All my libraries up there. We have, just a lot of great stuff on there. And we're all filmmakers. So
that's
we do a 50-50 deal with the filmmakers. And so if you have fantasy and sci-fi content, if it's at a level, I can pretty much guarantee you distribution. And we do a 50-50 non-exclusive, meaning that you could put it other places and you can tell us to take it down anytime you want. And every month, as the money comes in, we do a 50-50 split with the filmmakers because we're filmmakers ourselves. We don't want to be distributors. We're just distributors because no one else was doing it to distribute our content. So we created this platform and it's gone over amazingly well. In fact, right now we're doing what's called an equity crowdfunding campaign. Most people know what crowdfunding is. You know, I go on Kickstarter, you give me $10, I give you a DVD. But equity crowdfunding is you give me $100 and I actually give you ownership in the company. And so you can become an owner in the Fantasy Network, and people have loved that. And so people have kind of jumped on to do that. You know, one of the things I wanted to mention that Desi mentioned is the quality. Quality can be a two-edged sword. You know, on one hand, you wait around for the right perfect thing and you never do anything. And people get stymied in the desire. If it's not going to be excellent, they're not going to do it. And so they turn around and, you know, they're 45, 50 like I am and haven't done anything. And so on one hand, I recognize that sometimes you got to get out there and make stuff. But to Desi's point, I do think I think you should have three projects. One project should be a very, very micro low budget. What you can do with the resources you have, the El Mariachi, the Robert Rodriguez film scenario.
Oh, yes.
Two, you should have your second film should be under $1 million. Something you can do for under $1 million. Your third film should be as big budget as you want. It's the studio project. It's your home run. Have all three, because some people get so caught up that they only have that one film. You should be producing. The only way people actually become a producer for a living is they have multiple projects going on at once. And by the way, if you have a project that you're trying to get out there, you are a producer. I think some people just need to own that title and stop trying to say, well, no, I'm not a producer. No, you're a producer. So you're the one that's going to carry it. No one's going to take your project. That's, you know, a farce to think that someone's going to take it, finance it. And if you're a screenwriter and want to sell your screenplay, that's different, right? You're trying to sell it. You need a manager or an agent. You yourself are not going to get to Netflix directly. That's another misnomer. People think, oh, well, I'm going to just do my project and get it to Netflix. That's not the way it works.
Really
they
impossible.
Only deal with managers and agents. And then also with Netflix and specifically, I got my stuff on Netflix, specifically Netflix and Amazon, any of what's called the streamers. The streamers are, you know, all the streamers out there. There's two options. You can either get on their platform and they're just a distributor, right? And they're not going to give you a lot of money for that. I think what most people want is a Netflix original. They want Netflix to pay for it and then also distribute it. The only way that's really going to happen is if you're pitching that before you go downrange and make it. It's extremely rare for them to buy something outright and call it a Netflix original. They want to be a part of the filmmaking process so that they can vet it and help it along. And so that's the other misnomer I've seen indies do. They'll make a movie. They'll then try to, you know, they'll say, my strategy is going to be, I'll sell it to Netflix as a Netflix original. That's not the way it works. You've made the movie at this point. They're not involved. They weren't involved. The only thing that they can do at that point is be a distributor. And Netflix has been great for a lot of things, but they just don't pay a lot of money to distribute it. You're better off getting a different deal, get that sales agent, get that distributor. And let me just say that the world is broken down into two different areas. There's domestic distributors. And when we say domestic, we mean the American market. So that usually includes Canada. And then there's the foreign market. And that's broken down by territories, not by countries. So you'll have New Zealand and Australia are like the same territory, and you sell out a territory. And so there's a bunch of different territories that you can sell, and you need a sales agent to do that. And the sales agents are the ones that go to all these markets I mentioned earlier to sell product and bundle product. But kind of swinging back to the quality arena, what some people are doing is, and I have a film right now that was filmed. They spent $1.6 million, and then they come to me to try to help them distribute it. Well, the problem is they have actors that were once known but really aren't known now. So when we say known actor, they have to be what's called a bankable actor, someone that's actually going to warrant sales. And not every actor has that. And you don't want to pay money for an actor that isn't going to move the needle unless you just, you know, you have it like that and you're a super fan. But a sales agent can tell you which actors are sellable in this current market. And it ebbs and flows, you know, just like the market. So don't just cast someone without you need to have distribution in mind from get-go. You need to understand, if I bring on, you know, Chris Evans, that's very different than me bringing on, you know, another actor that was once popular but might not be now, or they're more of a peripheral actor and they're not quite there yet. The other thing we have to get out of as independent filmmakers is like hooking our friends up. You know, it's got to be a business.
Oh yeah, that is such a pitfall.
your small project, your El Mariachi $7,000 film, do that with that one. Bring your friends on for that one. But if you're going to bring on equity, private capital, people are going to give you money to make a movie. You're obligated, some would even say legally, to do the best for the film. And if you don't watch it, the moment you take on people's money, you take on liability. And that liability, you have to honor that. And you have to show that you are bringing that project to the best of its ability. Right now, foreign sales have become extremely hard. So unless you have an actor, I told you it's 60% of the budget, but unless you have a notable actor of worth, foreign sales have just become hard. You know, we're in right now China's consuming, they're going to ultimately pass us with consumership. India is second, you know. So the world has gotten a lot smaller. You need to think globally when you're doing these things to have that sales agent to kind of get you out there, or something like the Fantasy Network to have a distribution platform to get you out there. Because Netflix is not going to give you, you know, they're not going to pay you a ton of money if you've already done the film. Unfortunately, on that film where the local guy did $1.6 million, I don't know how much he's going to make back, but it's not even going to be anywhere near that because the talent that he has in the film, I know, and I feel horrible for him. And not that I'm, you know, I know it all, but if he had come to me beforehand, I could have guided him to get him the biggest return.
That's really important because, like you said, when you're taking on other people's money, there's an obligation and a high level of stress there because the first people that make any money at all are the people that invest it. You have to pay them back first. And then there's points involved before you ever even start profit. And I think a lot of people, they don't understand the business part of the business. And they'll make mistakes that cost them, you know, not only financially, but relationship-wise. Because if you burn an investor, you're not going to have them for our next project that you want later.
Well, you also,
or other people.
You also, that's right. You also burn them for everybody. You don't just burn them for yourself.
Exactly.
There's not a gazillion high net worth investors. Right. Right.
We had a discussion about this because there's a project that Ron has that I want to get my hands on so bad. And it's called Outlaw Faith, which we're going to talk about too. It's a steampunk project that is just, I mean, to me, it's like Star Wars and a Western mix. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
But we were saying the same thing, you know, out in our area, so many people have been burnt that now no one can get near them.
Yeah, right. And that's a lot of high network investors. They're not falling off trees. It's not like there's a plethora of them. We don't need to genuflect in front of them, but there's certain level of respect. You know, these people get pitched all the time. And they've taken a lifetime to get their worth, and then they get pitched from people all over trying to get the money from them. And invariably, a filmmaker is eventually going to come along. And most of them, unfortunately, have not thought through the business side of things, and they end up – we all know that film is high risk. But let me say this.
Yeah.
The studios made $50 billion with a B dollars last year. $50 billion. Now, that was all the studios combined. That's profit. That's after expenses. So I'm convinced that one of the ones spreading that message of this is high risk, are the studios because they're laughing all the way to the bank. As it's high risk, they keep making it. But the independent filmmakers, unfortunately, they don't do what the studios do. They don't mitigate risk. They don't do – recently, I've been putting together a film fund, which is a slate of films. We only complain about the studio system, but we don't take what they do really well. The studios generally know a number of films out. Most of them are going to lose money. Some of them are going to break even. But what's called the tentpole films, the big films, are going to crush it so much, it's going to make up for the others. And so their risk threshold, they're able to sustain it. And then they can mitigate those risks, right? Just like any business venture. And you mitigate that risk. I've already told you one is a lot of people think that talent doesn't matter anymore. It totally matters. Actors matter. And I mean that, you know, actors universally, they matter. Their name matters on a project, probably now more than ever because there's so much noise out there that, but spectacle, CGI, those things, they enhance that, but they don't replace an actor. So we have to think entrepreneurially. We have to think from a business lens, and we have to stop burning these investors, but we also need to stop being afraid and acting like that we can't mitigate these risks. There's plenty of people that have cracked this code, and they're doing very well servicing the studios and the streamers. And if you want to be that, then you got to think entrepreneurially.
Yeah. A lot of people flock to Amazon because Amazon seems to be an easier, but I'm upset with Amazon because just like studios, they're laughing all the way to the bank. I mean, what's the cut now that they're taking? Is it like 30, 40, 50%?
Oh, it's way more than that. I mean, you're getting on the dollar. And to your point, they've even cut it even worse. Now, I will say that that the Fantasy Network, we put some content up on Amazon and have done well. Okay, so I want to say that with a caveat. But for the most part, Amazon is a – look, you and I can be loyal to each other as friends, but a company cannot be loyal to an individual. Amazon needs to be loyal to its investors, and that's just the way it's going to be, which is why the Fantasy Network, in my mind, is so important. We can be loyal to the filmmakers. We can create a win-win for the filmmaker and the watcher. And that's what the Fantasy Network is all about, giving a voice to people that otherwise wouldn't have one. Amazon is people act like sometimes that's mission success because they've gotten their stuff up on Amazon. It's easy to get your stuff up on Amazon. That's not that difficult. It's the marketing. You know, it's the marketing is what's hard. You got to drive eyeballs to the stuff.
And the thing that really struck me is I sign up for Amazon Prime every year because I said, well, you know, my shipping is free and I can watch these films. Yeah. And then I sat there one day and I said, wait a minute. As a filmmaker, I'm shooting myself in the foot because when they sell these Prime memberships, a person pays $100 for the year, right? Then they get to watch all this content for free. So you're kind of dwindling the profits for the filmmakers, I think, the lower budget
films. I heed your point, and it is kind of. You get a little taste of that $100 as the filmmaker, but it's like, 0.03 cents or something, right? Of every, they go on minutes watched and all that. So it's not, technically it's not free. I know it feels free for the filmmaker or even to the buyer. They feel like, oh, I watched that on Amazon for free. Well, technically it's not free. It's just included in your Prime. And the filmmakers do get a little taste of that, but it's a very different cut, which is why there is a sales channel that you start at the top and you kind of work down. And streaming is one of the last ones you do. And so many people jump right to that first. Now, the studios, frankly, are still trying to figure that out, right? They're doing a release, a day-and-day release. They're doing this, releasing the film same day in theaters as they're releasing online. But they're doing it VOD. They're not doing it for free, for heaven's sake. We couldn't afford – filmmaking is an expensive proposition. And so many people want it for free or for nothing, and yet they want the quality and content to be so high. And I get frustrated at times of some of the offers I've gotten when these people are in the industry and they know how expensive stuff is, and they act like, they lowball you at times thinking that, you're going to be excited about that, and they know how expensive it is. But Amazon, out of the Prime thing, I have Prime too, and I think for all the reasons you said, they made it very convenient. And you do need to end up on Prime, but that shouldn't be like, I've got my film, to me, that's almost an ego thing. Like, wow, I've got my film up on Amazon Prime. It's like, well, are you making any money? Is that, and you put it out there first, and now no one's going to buy it.
So, well, it's just we have, a series that ended up on Prime. It's from a guy locally from Baltimore. It's a great series, but he was having a discussion, and I think he said, I make 6 cents every time somebody watches it.
Amazon, of course, they're not going to care that you have that up there. They're not going to drive traffic to it. You need to drive traffic to it. And, the gold is getting on the recommend. So, after you watch a film, you look at the bottom, it says recommended. I recommend this because you watch that. That's the gold. But the only way to get up there is if you're trending, if you're getting your numbers high. And the only way to do that is through marketing. And so these distributors that you need domestically, they'll get you up on those platforms too, but they have a better algorithm scale. They can help that along a little bit better. But even getting a distributor is not mission success. When we got a distributor, we still had to do our own marketing towards it.
Right. Which is why, fantastic at, by the way.
No, I appreciate that. I think you got to have fan engagement throughout, throughout all the time. And, it should be a community. I've become friends with a lot of these people that, found me you know, just as like a fan through content, and we've developed a friendship, you know, and a camaraderie. And they themselves, I have a firm belief that everybody's a storyteller, and it just needs to be reawoken in them. And so for people to begin to think like, wow, I might be able to do this too, is a pretty exciting opportunity. And I just try to encourage and help along. And I've done that in kind of various capacities, but the Fantasy Network right now is, you know, my biggest venture is I can pretty much guarantee someone distribution. So when you go to an investor, that's a very different conversation than, well, what's your distribution outlet? Well, I don't know. We're going to do the film festival circuit. Doing the film festival circuit is not the plan. That should not be the plan. That's a college person's plan, which is fine for them. But that shouldn't be someone that's really trying to – they've raised $1 million, and they're going to go to the film festival route. That's not what you should do. You can use film festivals to increase your pedigree, to make your film, you know, appear to be, and as it should be, when you win all these awards. But let's be honest. There's a gazillion film festivals out there. So the fact that, you know, you won the Clifton Town Hall, you know, film festival, is that really going to turn the needle? Well, no, but if you win enough of them, suddenly that might make people go, wow, okay, you know, this thing's won like 20 awards. But me personally, I'll do some film festivals, but I want to get this thing in the hands of the distributor and get this thing sold. That's my goal.
Right. Which is, like you said, the goal. And unfortunately, a lot of indie filmmakers I've met, their goal is to make the film, but they're not thinking about the process. What do you do once you have it? And then so many people end up with a film in their hand, and it doesn't go anywhere. You know, it's
right.
So
yeah,
but
they unfortunately,
I don't want to run out of time. I want you to
tell
us about the series where you got the permission to use. I want you to tell us the because I loved that whole Rangers thing that broke out into a series, and there was a game that you designed with pieces.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I think we are in the business. So we are all storytellers, but we are in the business of IP exploitation. We need to be exploiting our IP, our intellectual property, our stories, our movies in various ways. George Lucas said it best when he said, you know, the toys sold better than the films. You know, that's how he got rich, was more of retaining the rights to the toys, not necessarily Star Wars. Now, Star Wars had to crush it for the toys to be successful and to matter, but the toys also mattered, particularly financially. And so people are consuming media in tons of different ways, in tons of different formats. So you might have, you know, the short that becomes the feature that becomes the episodic, but then you also might have, particularly now, you might have the VR experience, or you might have an offload of a card game, a board game, a miniatures game. You might do a video game. I've tapped into all those. So as you said, Desi, I have a Rangers card game. I have a Rangers board game. We have a Rangers video game that we are continuing to work on. I did what's called a live experiential event in this thing called Weekend Warrior, where literally 250 of us went out on a weekend, and we do it every year. And we dress up in the world of the Rangers, and we go live as a Ranger for a weekend. It's fantastic.
That is so cool.
And it's set in my world. You know, it's set in the world of Oleron, you know, which is this kingdom that I created with the, you know, I'm saying me, but, you know, several people that contribute to these things. The director is only the, you know, front person of many people that put a lot of hours. So I want to make sure this is a team sport. You know, it's IP exploitation. That's where I think you need to be thinking of. My short film that you mentioned, Outlawed Faith, is a steampunk Western sci-fi, very much Hell on Wheels meets Firefly. That was the goal. I did a short film where a guy had a Western town in his backyard in Maryland. I got permission to go over there, One-Eyed Horse Productions, and was able to film my short in 2 days. We had about 150 extras come out. turned out great. So I wrote the feature. And it's up on the Fantasy Network. You could see that for free. And then I also just did the comic book and did a Kickstarter for that to get enough money to print the comic book. And now we're doing the comic book of that. I mean, again,
and
is this money going to make me retire?
The artwork or animation for that comic book is outstanding because they look exactly like the people you have in the film.
It turned out great. Yeah. No, it turned out fantastic. And I will say, you know, is that going to make me retire? No. We're still in the business of filmmaking. We're still in the business of storytelling. But, you know, what I love also about the Fantasy Network is it's long form, it's episodic, but it's also short form. I used to always kind of look at shorts with a questionable eye of like, why are we doing this? You know, because nobody's buying shorts. But now in the Netflix world, people are buying shorts. And so we take all form of content up on the Fantasy Network. And so right now, Outlawed Faith is a 15-minute opportunity. And, you know, again, I have the feature to it. I have the script. I think it's great. I'm trying to get that financed.
I think it's phenomenal.
You know, it's ready to go. And
quick,
it's right also.
Tell Rennell, tell Rennell how many likes you had when you first released the short of Outlawed Faith.
Yeah, we, you know, it was right as Facebook was trying to decide if it was going to do video or not. And we decided, hey, look, you know, instead of putting it up on YouTube first, let's put it up on Facebook. And I think it was in the first week we ended up with over 300,000 views on it. So, and we, that was before we didn't drive any, you know, marketing dollars. That was just organic traffic that people just found it and shared it and, you know, went around. So there's definitely a desire for it. You know, that genre is untapped. There's been a lot of steampunk stuff. Carnival Row has been the most recent, which was well received. So it's right to be made. Joss Whedon has said he's not going to do Firefly again. So for those fans holding out for that, you know, it's not going to happen. So let's greenlight Outlawed Faith. I'm ready.
Yeah, definitely. So on the, tell me what platforms. Because going back to the Rangers, which there were how many episodes? What were their titles?
So, yeah, we did something rather interesting. We did a 60-minute pilot episode, and then I've had smaller shorts that have gone around it, and then I even had some fans that have come up and created fan content. Because that's the other thing. Most people, they do these fan short films, and even though they're not getting any money, technically, legally, you're not allowed to do that. That is copyright infringement. But I've opened up the world of the Rangers for people to go and co-create with me legally. I'm giving permission. You can go out right now. I have this whole, this entire Bible of this world that I created. You can go create a film. And then the good ones I put up on, and they actually all of them so far, you can go up on the Fantasy Network and watch all the different Ranger shorts that myself or other people have done.
That is so fantastic. And that makes it so,
and
I love what I love about it. It attracts so many people because again, you have the Rangers and you have a whole series of elves, like elven people. Then you have, these creatures that are unlike anything I've ever seen. They look like a living gargoyle, you know? His swords and everything. I mean, it's just fantastic. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, you know, we're lovers of the genre. You're always going to get compared to Tolkien. You're always going to, and that's fine. You know, C.S. Lewis, I think, said it best. He said, stop trying to worry about being original. And when you do, you'll become original. So I'm not worried about, you know, people saying, oh, this looks like Lord of the Rings. Great. I take that with pride. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings nut. And, you know, but this is set in my own world. This is not set in Middle Earth. This is set in the world called Adrasil. And I have a whole mythos and history behind that. And it's open. People can come in and join me in co-creating in that world.
Well, I think that's what I loved about Outlawed Faith. You created an entire, forget about one planet.
Yeah.
You created a whole universe.
Yeah.
So there's these characters that are in one planet, but they have the ability to escape to another, which opens it up to like a series because for each planet, then you have a new set of people, like or aliens or whatever you want to call it. It just can go on forever.
Exactly. Yeah, these little kids are seers. That's when their powers are heightened the most. And the biggest antagonist of the project is this group called the Galactic Federation. And they're hunting these seers, and they declared them outlaw. And this guy, Colt of Blackhand, played by Lion Beckwith, who's going to be in Wonder Woman 1984, he plays a character that is a reluctant hero. He doesn't think he deserves it. He doesn't think he can protect anybody, but this little girl comes for his protection, and he feels obliged to protect her. And so he stands up and says, you're not going to take her. She's not going to live the world or the life that you have set out for her. And he steps up reluctantly, but he becomes the hero. One, because I, you know, it's kind of my own story, you know, a little bit, where we all feel down and out at times. We all feel like we're not worthy enough or don't have the skills enough as a filmmaker. But sometimes you just need to step up and step in.
Yeah. And he does. He's extremely good in that part. It's just extremely good.
No, he was great.
And that's the other thing
Absolutely.
I love about your work is diversity. There is diversity in what you produce. And
100%.
That was one of my biggest complaints. Like, I'm going to admit it. I'm a total girl. I'll sit here and I'll just... I don't know why I got absorbed into the Hallmark's Christmas movies.
Yeah,
my wife
loves
those. And I say, why is everybody white?
Yeah,
where
right.
All these
right.
towns are all white. And then I
right.
think, you know, certain people started to complain to the union, and now you're starting to see a little more diversity.
Right, I think they've woken up to that, right? I mean, for Outlawed Faith, Colt of Blackhand, he's played by Lion Beckwith. He's half African-American, half Native American. His co-part, which also did a great job, is Martin Lopez, who is Hispanic. We have strong female characters. No, my writing partner is African-American. We want to ensure that we have a full, diverse breadth of, and you see that on the Fantasy Network. We're giving voices to people that otherwise don't feel like that they might have it. We're very diverse, very open, and we want that. We want to maintain that. We want to be very intentional about bringing stories to life of diversity.
Well, I mean, that's fantastic. And I think that's the only way you can make something real, you know.
Yeah. Well,
whether
also,
it's fiction or not.
In fantasy and sci-fi, in fantasy and sci-fi, we can talk about a lot of things that are modern challenges. Like, we don't need to hit it on the head, though. We don't need to hammer it. You know, like, it's not a particular race. It's an alien, you know, that is being, you know, outcast. You know, it's this type of thing that you can do a lot with the genres of fantasy and sci-fi.
The other thing that I thoroughly enjoy is all of everything that you bring. The concept, I've seen you, your renderings. There's you put together a complete... package.
Yeah.
I think you had so much success.
No, I appreciate that. I think you got to spend a little money to. People aren't visionaries. You can't show them something that kind of looks okay and then say, well, it's not going to look like that. It only kind of looks like that. People don't have that big of an imagination that can make the leap. They're going to take it, they're going to judge it on its face. So I do spend a little money on the development when you're pitching to make sure your stuff looks good. There's too many great artists out there that you can bring on the team, even temporarily, to help bring your story to life with some strong visuals.
What you've completed with the Rangers, and now you're working on with the comic book. We know how the film distribution works, but how does the comic book distribution work?
Right.
What outlets are you going to use to market and sell your comic book to?
So what I don't want to do is get into the self-publishing world. And, you know, that's a big lift. I want to bring on the right partners and teammates to do that. So I've been talking to a few comic book distributors, certainly at the indie level, but I've been talking to some to help me get it out there. But really, it's also serving as a visual display of the film. And it's not going to be the full film. It's only going to be 20 pages. So it'll probably be the first act of the film in the comic. And we'll sell the comics, but it's also, I'm going to be using that to gain interest into the IP that I can then bring that to the producers, distributors, and buyers in Hollywood to try to leverage that to get it out there. It may or may not work. Either way, the IP, the story, is getting out there. And, you know, I don't want to wait to do it. Another thing that we're looking at is dramatic narrative podcasts have become quite popular. And during a COVID era, that's something that's possible, where you could potentially get some named talent to do a dramatic podcast, and they're doing quite well.
You see, that's what I like about you. You are always thinking. That is brilliant, because I'll tell you, you know, here we are talking about distributing and studios and, you know, sellable faces that have a screen time and all that, and yet here we are all kind of at a standstill, because who knows when theaters are going to open up again. And as you said, you know, streaming is not the first thing you want to go to. Everybody hopes for a release in the theater.
I want to make sure, because we actually have to wrap up, that Ron got to talk about everything he wanted to. The Fantasy Network, your comic books, and Forge Studios.
Yeah, the Forge Studios is my local company. Where we like to do fantasy and sci-fi narrative content. That's predominantly what I do. But, you know, use me as a resource. I'm here to help. You know, I want win-win scenarios. I want to keep the cameras rolling. The only way we can do that is together. And so the biggest
thing I
have right now is the Fantasy Network. And if I could be of assistance to someone via the Fantasy Network, I mean, we're hoping and praying that this thing gets big enough to where, you know, we're financing projects outright. We're just starting to put a little money into projects now, and not our own.
So
these
tell
are
us the websites
producers.
Again. What are the websites that people can go and find out about all three of these things, even your comic book?
It's thefantasy.network, thefantasy.network. But there, we also have apps on Roku, Android, Google Play, Apple. You have an app. You can get it right on your phone or your iPad or your TV. You can just look up the Fantasy Network, and there's apps there. Again, 90% of our content is free. 90% of our content is free to watch. And if you're a filmmaker that has content, you can go on that website, and you can reach out to me, ron@thefantasy.network, and you can email me. I'm happy to do that. My company locally in the DMV area is The Forge Studios. So like an anvil forge, theforgestudios.com.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
That's also where you can find
Ron, can you spell it out? Because sometimes certain letters.
Sure.
So that they know exactly.
Forge Studios, studios.com, theforgestudios.com. And you can go on there and also find the comic book there as well.
And you are, and Ron is also on IMDb, if you guys want to take a look, because he has done acting, directing, screenwriting, producing.
I started as an actor. I fell in love with acting, and then through that I realized, you know, it just takes so long and the effort that you become a producer. I encourage everyone to become a producer, everyone.
Sweet. Well, Ron, we loved having you here.
Thank you.
We hope you'll come back again.
No worries. Absolutely, my pleasure.
Talk
anytime.
So much information you have. I feel like I could talk to you for hours. But really appreciate.
It was an honor
absolutely.
To have you. Because I think it's the best way to help indie people is to listen to someone that's actually doing it, but doing it correctly and actually succeeding.
Yeah.
Any final
that.
Words of advice for indie filmmakers out there?
Yeah, you know, you got to get out there and roll cameras. And this life is not meant to be a solo sport, neither is filmmaking. There's a community
teamwork.
Out here that is ready to come alongside you. So, teamwork makes dream work, no doubt.
Love it. Thank you so much, Ron, and we look forward to talking
My
to
pleasure.
You again.
Thank
Absolutely.
You so much, Ron. Hug
right.
to the
Thank
wife
you.
And the kids and the brand
Absolutely.
New baby.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right, bye.
Bye.
Okay, so this is Desi Velez, and
I'm Renelle Golden,
signing off from the indie film scene, and our next guest will be Connie Lamas.
Thank you for listening. This is Indie Film Scene, where we take you from script to screen.
You've been listening to Indie Film Scene. Tune in next time for more exciting conversations with filmmakers taking you from script to screen.